This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Needs No Introduction, fresh ideas from speakers of note. On September 7th, 2007, Kenyan parliamentary candidate Flora Agoki Tera was abducted and tortured by a group of men. The attack took place with the intention of silencing her election bid against a minister in President Mwai Kibaki's government and was carried out with impunity. Tara's physical recovery took weeks and resulted in the loss of her place in the December election, but the hardest blow came the following year, when her 19-year-old only son was murdered, his death brushed aside by the authorities. Flora Tara's case is not an isolated incident. 153 cases of electoral violence against women candidates were reported to Nairobi's Education Center for Women and Democracy leading up to the 2007 elections. For Tara, this injustice has given her all the more reason to hold on to her political aspirations. She has since founded Tara Against Terror, an organization for victims of electoral violence, and works with the Center for Multi-Party Democracy to strengthen the democratic process in Kenya. She will run for parliament again in the 2012 Kenyan elections. On September 23rd, Amnesty International Canada hosted Flora Tara in Ottawa. Here is a recording from that evening.
I never thought it was serious until September 7th, when they laid an attack on me, and very young boys were sent to wait for me at the gate, and they talked to me very well, very nicely, and said they asked me why I was in a hurry. I told them before I said anything, the man who was their commandeer grabbed me and choked me. And he asked, where's that thing? I thought of the money I'd carried. I thought of everything. And when he got his hands to get whatever he was asking for, I managed to plead with him and tell him, take all the money, but don't kill me. Because I thought he was asking for a gun. He wasn't asking for a gun. In him, they had a can of feces. They were pulling my hair, mixing it with feces, forcing it down my throat. They had broken my leg. They had dislodged my neck disc. So I was not in, my body was numb. So I wasn't really going through any pain at that particular time, because the pain was the first 20 minutes of torture. And it's at this time that I heard him tell them, take her to the father's grave, we're going to rape her from there. In African setup, it has a lot of imprecation, raping you in a grave. It has so much imprecation, you know, cultural imprecation. Later, I didn't think about it at that time, but every day I think about what would have happened to me at that particular time, being laid with my father in the grave. It brings a lot of, you know, like bitterness, and, you know, I really feel like very hurt. But then they were not able, because the dogs, my neighbor's dogs, were really barking. I was saved by two kids. As they took me to the gate to put me in the car, two young girls would come to the shop, started screaming because they had seen my, everything was so, my clothes were swelled, I had blood all over, and they started screaming. And it's at this time that the neighbors came out, and of course my mother had said scream, and people were going to call her, it's your daughter, come, let's save her. And the man was still there. He was saying, help her to the car, take her to hospital. But I was clinging onto a woman's skirt because I couldn't talk. I couldn't tell them, this is the man who's done this to me. I don't know where he vanished, but as I was being driven to hospital, I could hear him asking my sister which hospital I was being taken to. We got to hospital, the gate was blocked by the same car that was supposed to rescue me, and my sisters had to jump over the fence and ask for the watchman to come and help. I was taken to many people, the 25 women, we were in one caucus, kept calling, every time we went to the constituencies, we would tell each other, I'll call you when I get home, so that you can know I'm safe. So those I didn't call were calling, and they were told by my mother. And they told the then Minister of Health, who was also in the 25 winnable seat, and she sent an ambulance for me to be taken to the city. And this is where I was taken to the city. But then they did not stop there. I understand in the National Hospital, there are some people that came looking for whoever was admitted from Meru, and the nurses said, you cannot see her. You have to wait till the doctors come tomorrow morning. That's when I was again transferred. This brought to me a lot of torture. Apart from the physical pain, the torture of knowing that they've done this and they still want, you know, to do more damage. I thought of my son too. I said, what would he have done if I died? Anyway, I was able to, many people were able to convince me, like, you know, this is a very powerful person, you want to get out of his seat, it's dangerous. Why don't you even seek asylum? I said, that's the last thing in mind. And I stopped talking anymore to even the press people who were there. And all I said to them was, no retreat, no surrender. I will get into I will go back into my constituency in crashes, and I'll make sure that I've casted my vote. And I'm not going to vote for anyone else. I'll vote for myself. I will make sure that my name is in the ballot paper. At this time, I'd received so much support from international, from ambassadors, including the Canadian ambassador. So much support, so many letters were being written to the Electoral Commission. Women stood together, and I would see, and I said, this is the time I need to give women, you know, more, this is the time I need to inspire them. This is the time I need to show them, yes, broken bodies are there, but we need to keep our spirits, you know, charged. And come the polling day on the 27th, I casted my vote. I was with my mother, I was with my brothers, my brother, one brother, and six sisters. I wouldn't tell you who they voted for because it's a secret ballot. But I'm very sure Flora Terra voted for Flora Terra. I voted for myself. When I went to the tallying station, in my polling station, I had zero. I told one of my agents, tell them to repeat. Flora Terra in this Kenoro Primary School, zero. I couldn't believe it. I went there myself, and I said, I didn't vote for myself. I looked at my finger, and I said, I'm walking, and I'm going back to Nairobi. That was at midnight. I prepared my son psychologically. I said, it's not proper. I do not know what is going to happen. Whoever wins or whoever loses, but we have to go. We have to be safe. We went to Nairobi, and after 2 days, election violence erupted. There were disputed elections. There was chaos all over. People were killing each other. There was children were being raped. Old women were being raped. It had turned into a war of skirts, because I don't see what a 2-month-old baby had to do with disputed election. Why would you rape such a child? And women had gotten together too to demand our country back. And among them was me. So I said to the women that I don't think we are doing the right thing. Yeah, we are dealing with the effects, but we also need to deal with the cause. And it's at this time that I said, we have to go back to the youth. We have to go and talk to them. We have to tell them there need to be a solution. We need to, you know, like bring it out in a different, in an environment way. And it's at this time that I went back to Kibera. This is where my organization is. And we started doing door-to-door campaign, calling on the youth to stop fighting, calling on the youth to stop destroying property, educating them on that they're actually destroying themselves. The two people they are fighting for are very comfortable in their houses, and they have security and everything. Let's see one of them give their sons out to lead the you know, like you know, to read the protest. And we started getting sense, and it's at this time that I actually did not concentrate more on the high-level peace building. I concentrated more on Kibera. And it's at this time the chief in that camp allowed us to be meeting twice a week. While I was doing all this, my enemies were reading it from the newspapers, and they were also plotting to silence me more. And it's at this time that I lost my only child. And to you today, I would say, I lost my dignity. My bones were broken, but there's one thing I never lost. I never lost my spirit. I had to get myself back so that I can be able to talk on behalf of the voiceless women in Kenya. I'm privileged today to be here in Canada through the Canadian lawyers abroad, to be able to address such a forum and to be able to see the youth here from Kenya coming to learn from you Canadians. We need to do something in Kenya. Whatever affects Kenya affects you too. Because I would say violence is global. It knows no borders. It knows no race. It has no class. So I stand here today, not as Flora Terra. Yes, I've said my story. I've told you my story. But I've just decided to use myself as history, you know? This is the person who survived, but her spirit is still burning. There are many more Kenyans with the same spirit that I have. But we need to get them to work. We need to get them into leadership. We need to force our countries to give us strong institutions. Violence is real. I suffered it. I'm a survivor of violence. And I want to tell you, my brothers and sisters and my children, that it is very bitter. We live with it. The trauma, you cannot say you'll see any doctor to get your emotional scars out. When I see young children, I think about my son. Oh, I wish my son would be here. But I can't bring him back. I have to fight for him to see that he never lost his life in vain. So with those few remarks, I welcome you to ask me any questions. And not only questions, please. At this point, I would like to also hear your contribution on how to help my organization, Terror Against Terror, work more. We work with the perpetrators of violence. We work also with the survivors of violence. We have so many programs. I would like to hear what programs I can do to improve my country. I'd also like to be criticized constructively. Thank you so much.
On the Rabble Podcast Network, you're hearing part of an evening with Kenyan human rights activist Flora Igoki Terra at Amnesty House in Ottawa.
I was wondering, Flora, what the history of political involvement for women in Kenya has been like. Have there been many women members of parliament?
At the moment, we have 18 members of parliament who have been elected, and six of them who've been nominated. That's how many we have. But remember, the international treaty says that we need 30% of that, so we are not yet at 30. That's also another challenge that organizations and the Canadian government can, you know, like put it to my government so that we can be able to implement what already they've ratified.
What has been the reaction of the Kenyan government to your touring and speaking?
I need to tell you that I came here on a scholarship to study women's human rights for 1 month, and without any fear of contradiction, I speak as I am speaking today, and if I was called to speak at the Kenya Embassy, I'll say exactly what I'm saying today. We are very weak institutions. We have poor governance. So it's up to us Kenyans to change this. But as President Obama said, Kenyans do not need a strong man. They need strong institutions. So that's what High Flora Terra will fight for when I get to Parliament in 2012.
I forgot to mention earlier that Flora will have her book for sale, I think, after we finish here, and I really highly recommend it to anybody as a compelling read. But I want to ask, I know that you plan to run again in 2012, and I'm wondering if you have any fears or concerns about your own security in 2012 and the security of other women that will be running in 2012.
Well, there's so much concern, and what I'm going to look at is I'm going to look at my strengths. In 2007, the strengths I had, the weaknesses I had, the opportunities I had, and the threats I had. And among the threats was security. So I'm really going to look at security. I'm also going to look at a formulation of a network where women can have mentors in Canada, women who've gone through politics. Look at programs like of self-defense mechanism, programs of fundraising, programs of learning the political game, because it's not very easy for a woman to really win elections in Kenya without really being in party hierarchy. You know, like getting into real party issues.
Have you been able to create any links with women parliamentarians here?
I've been able to. The only political party I've met in Canada so far is the Green Party of Canada, that is led by Elizabeth May. Mm-hmm. And I understand the challenges are the same. I mean, though they are more privileged, the challenges are the same. And I'm also hoping to meet members of parliament. Lindry has arranged for me to meet with a few members of parliament and senators, and I'll give them the same message.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So I work with Canada World Youth, and the young people who are here today from Kenya are here on part of a youth exchange. So we work in partnership with Kajabi Environment Volunteers in Kimende. So we'll be here until December, and all of these young people are volunteering here in Canada, and then we're going for 3 months to Kenya, and they'll be volunteering there as well. So each of these young Canadians will be living partnered with a young Kenyan. Now they're billeting with Canadian host families, they'll be living with Kenyan families while they're there. And I'm just wondering, you said that you're returning in October to Kenya, we'll be there from December until February. Would there be any opportunity for you to come in a Kenyan community and talk to some other youth and young women about the same kind of issues that you're having, that you're talking about here tonight, and maybe share some more stories with us, but in Kenya?
Yes, I will. My organization deals a lot with the youth, and mostly we deal with the perpetrators, but every youth is vulnerable to being a perpetrator too. So I will also have a chance to introduce you to the youthful youthful parliamentarians, so that you can also be able to tell them more about your participation as a youth in Canadian politics and stuff like that. But I really welcome you, and I'll be there to either host or speak to every one of you.
Would you help me? I'm a little bit confused about how you run. I mean, which party? Are you with the present party that's running your country? Is it like our parliamentary system? How many parties do you have in your country to run? I mean, are you chosen by the party? Could you just explain how you got nominated?
Okay. we have about 72 political parties.
What?
Not seven, not two. Seven, two political parties. And there's a bill, there's a political bill, political parties bill that was passed a while ago parties are all good. When it comes to issues of women, every party has very many goodies for women. But one of the regulations for it to be they were reviewing the 72 political parties, and one of regulations was to have 35% of top leadership in each political party, and we managed only 35 managed to meet the rules. So we are 35 officially recognized party today, but we have three top parties, and the three top parties are ODM Kenya, which had a presidential candidate, ODM, which also had a presidential candidate, and PNU was many small parties together. And what is happening now, we formed, because of the post-election violence, we formed a coalition government. So all the parties are working together, and that is also making the country fail, because no one is accountable, and at the moment we don't have any opposition, so there's no one who's keeping the government on toes. Yeah.
How could it be different? How is it going to be different in 2012? Will it be the same 72 parties?
No, in 2012 they're only going to be the parties that are already recognized by the government. Remember, there were 72.
Yeah.
And then there was a bill that came through parliament with regulations. And some of the regulations were each and every political party must have 200 people from every district. We have 74 districts. So 74 times 200, brings the members of that particular political party. Some of them didn't have even a member.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of them were briefcase political parties. They didn't even have offices. So what happened was all these 72 were reduced to 35.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them also went to court to contest the political party's bill. But that has already been passed, and the president has assented to the bill. So we are expecting to have just the 35 political parties in 2012.
Could you just explain, how was your prime minister chosen then? How did he get to be prime minister?
He got to, our constitution is a parliamentary system.
Yeah.
So when the chaos erupted, we had to look for solutions, because the one party said they had won, the other party said they had won. So the former Kofi Annan, the former UN Secretary General, came as a mediator. And this is the time that they agreed, for the sake of the country to be together, we have to create a post of a prime minister. We don't have that in the constitution, but we had to pass a law in parliament. Parliament had to be recalled to pass a law to create a post of a prime minister and two of his deputies, so that we create a so that we can give the then prime minister, whose party is assumed to have won, a chance to be in the top management, top executive. Mm.
Yes.
I hope I'm clearly understood.
Thank you.
Are you understood?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
It's very different from what I thought.
As far as security for you, when you run again, there's an organization called International Peace Brigades that provide companions who just accompany a person who's being threatened during elections, or humanitarian workers who the government is not providing protection for them.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, volunteers from Canada or whatever, usually college age students, are given training, and they go and are they don't carry weapons, but they're just bodyguards. They just go and observe. And what that says to everyone is that the world is watching.
Mm-hmm.
And if something happens to this person, people are going to know, and people are going to see and hear what happened. I was wondering, there are two things. One, you could invite international peace brigades to come and accompany people who are being threatened, yourself and other politicians who are running. Or you could form your own organization, trying to pair yourself with people in Canada, maybe specifically other women's organizations.
Thank you so much. That's, of course, an idea that I'm going to pick quickly before I leave Canada and try and also get more in touch with you. If you could give me your contacts, please.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering what the status was of the constitution that you were talking about earlier, in something that was part of the debate in the 2002 elections. Like, is there a constitution in Kenya, or is that something that's still being battled over? Or?
The current coalition government has promised us a constitution before end of next year. So we're still hoping that it's not a PR exercise, but I know that at the moment we are in a constitution-making mood.
Thank you very much, Laura, for speaking. I wanted to ask you about sort of one of the further challenges down the road. Getting elected and getting into parliament for many women is a big challenge. But then once you actually get elected and are in parliament, the other challenge is, of course, pushing the agenda for women's rights in what is often not an open environment for that. Can you talk about what some of the challenges are for pushing for women's rights and women's equality in Kenya?
One thing is I do disagree also so much in getting so many women into parliament to just go and warm the seats. I would want to get a very few number of, we'd better even have the 8% in parliament, but very vocal, people pushing the agenda for the country, rather than get 50% who will go and join the men's club. Sorry, not every man is, who will go and join a small clique of men's club, who will be there to just satisfy their own needs. So the numbers, yes, matter, but I don't know which word to use here. The quality also matters most. Yes, we need the numbers, but we need quality. If we could have many women, like the former Minister of Justice, who resigned because she could not be allowed to push the agenda, to push our agenda in making the judiciary work, making the police work. Everything was made very... Life in that ministry for her was very miserable because no one could listen to her. She wanted zero tolerance to corruption. She had to resign. So I think if we could get many of them to parliament, it would Kenyan politics would would work.
Wanted to ask, you've openly shown your interest in participating in the 2012 election. Has your competitor, the one who did all these bad things to you, shown any reaction openly to you at this moment?
Has he reacted in any way?
Well, of course, the reaction was, intimidating me by killing my only child. It's very painful. They maybe think, if they don't know that I'm in Canada, they maybe think that they've completely killed my spirit, but they will hear me in November. I'll be actively involved in the 16 days of activism, and more energy will come out because Canada has given Canadians have given me my life back. I've got a lot of support from institutions and individuals from Canada.
You mentioned the 16 days of activism. What is that?
We it's not really, I wouldn't say celebrating. It's when, it's recognizing the women who have died in the struggle on gender-based violence.
We actually, at Amnesty here, also take action during the 16 days of activism in Canada. It's a global campaign to end gender-based violence.
Yeah.
And sort of surrounding a number of key dates, starting with the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women on November 25th and ending with Human Rights Day and recognizing women's rights as human rights. So if people are interested in getting involved with our work on women's rights, you can come and talk to me.
Well, I was just out to ask, do the people in your like constituency not demented?
Yes.
Do they really know that you are aspiring to vote for the 2012 elections currently, or is it like you just like say to yourself, or do they know? And secondly, are you up to the task of like going to the very end to really grab that seat, to really like fight to the very end to get what you really are into doing?
Thank you so much. That's a very, very good question. I still have my networks. And I'm going to change my strategy, but I'm not going to openly talk about what I will do. But my networks are still there, and I've got I currently speak at least since I came to Canada. I've spoken for the 5 months. I've spoken twice to my chief campaigners, and in every meeting they talk. I tell them to, you know, acknowledge my presence, even if I'm not there in person. So I'm still willing. And watch my step. I will be in Parliament in 2012.
That was a recording from an evening with Flora Egoki Tara, Kenyan human rights activist, politician, and founder of Tara Against Terror, an organization for victims of electoral violence. Her book, They Never Killed My Spirit, an account of her experiences, was published last year. Thanks for listening, and tune in again to Needs No Introduction for fresh ideas from Speakers of Note.